The Jazz Scene Podcast gives an in-depth look at the lives and stories of the musicians performing in Columbus and beyond. This episode features renowned jazz guitarist Russell Malone, one of our featured guest artists for the Jazz at the Lincoln concert, West at 100. Today's host is Zach Compston, Executive Director of Programming and Education for the Jazz Arts Group of Columbus.
Well, Russell Malone, thank you so much for joining us here on the Jazz Scene Podcast, and welcome to Columbus. I have to ask, have you played Columbus? You've played everywhere, certainly.
I have played Columbus on more than one occasion. I think the first time I came through here was back in 1990. I came through here with Harry Connick Jr. Came through here another time with Diana Krall. Came through here with Benny Green.
Wow.
Yeah, so familiar with Columbus.
Can you remember some of the venues that you might have
played?
That
I can't remember.
There's so many actually in Columbus.
I just remember the vibe was so positive. The people were very responsive to the music. And there's some good musicians here in Columbus.
That's right.
Yeah,
similar to Indianapolis. It goes deep.
There's some really good players here.
Yeah. Well, we're here to play and celebrate West Montgomery. And, you know, one of the things being a fan of your music is that, you know, when you hear your sound, it's so iconically you. You know, I can hear the soulfulness, maybe a little bit of the church, you know, if that was something that it seems like maybe was an influence. I'd like to start first, before we talk about Wes, just about your roots. We spoke a little bit off mic about the church being an influence in your life. Was that musically an influence as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's the first music I ever heard was in the church. And we go to church, and we'd see these old ladies singing these songs. You know, the music wasn't mm-hmm. very sophisticated, but it was very moving. You hear them singing these songs, and it would be so emotional. You would see grown men, I mean, these big burly deacons, they'd be crying because it was just that powerful. You hear these old women singing these songs, or some of the old deacons leading the devotion. And it was almost like they were channeling the ancestors. Mm. It was very powerful.
And was singing in church something that you and your family also did?
So my mother sang in the choir. Okay. She played a little piano, but I couldn't sing. You don't
really
want to hear that. No, I would have ran everybody out of the room to hear me singing. But when I heard the guitar, we came to church one Sunday, and there was this really peculiar-looking object perched up against one of the pews. And I thought that was very interesting. So I'm like 4 years old at the time. So I see this cable. There was a hole in the guitar, a little hole in the car in the guitar, and there was a cable which extended from the guitar to this box, into this box, which I found out later on it was the amplifier.
Right.
And then the gentleman started to play this instrument. And once I heard the sound, saw him play and I heard mm-hmm. the sound, I knew immediately that whatever feelings I was feeling inside musically, I knew that interesting looking device would be the tool that I would be using to express myself.
To get that voice
across. So that's how I would be expressing myself. So my mom noticed that every time I go to church, I'd find myself standing over in the corner watching this gentleman or whoever else play this instrument, and she went out and bought me one, and it ruined me for life.
Well, one of the things that I hear in your playing is obviously the love of the guitar, because you can play solo so beautifully. You're such a supportive accompanist, and then your solo voice. But that vocal quality's in there, and I don't, you know, you say you don't sing, but it's almost like whether you did it or not, it was the phrasing, like a singer,
yes.
The breathing. I can hear that in your...
Well, you're a very perceptive listener, because singers, I'm influenced by the guitar and mm-hmm. other instrumentalists,
sure.
But I'm just as much, if not more, influenced by the voice, because I always wanted to have the quality of lyricism in my playing. And that was one of the things that attracted me to Wes Montgomery.
Right.
Because you hear him play, you're hearing the guitar, but at the same time, it's like he's speaking to you, like he's singing to you.
Right.
You know, and then the sound that he got. I think sound is, that's the first thing that the listener hears when they hear a musician play. The sound is the most important thing, because that's what, if the sound is appealing, that's what makes the listener want to lean in and really listen. Just like a person with an appealing speaking voice.
Right.
You know, you've heard people with the like Orson Welles. You know that name?
Sure. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Those guys spoke. You hear the sound of their voices, and you're like, wow. Okay. That got my attention. Now let me lean in a little further, a little closer, so I can hear what they're actually saying. I think that same principle applies to music.
And similar thing to what, you know, I was saying about your playing, you most definitely hear it in Wes, which is that the phrasing, mm-hmm. when to stop, when to breathe.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Do you find that the guitar, you know, as a young guitarist, I imagine that can be difficult because you don't have to breathe to play that.
Yeah,
instrument.
It's difficult for guitar.
You can fill
guitar.
Up some space.
It's difficult for piano.
Right, drums.
Yeah, so yeah. You know, you just have to listen to singers and listen to the way the old guys played. My point of reference is Lester Young.
Hmm.
I love Lester Young his playing, man. Ben Webster, all the old timers, they seem to have had that. Bird had it.
Right.
You know,
and
but, you know, horn players have to breathe.
Right, right. And I've heard mm-hmm. you say that Ray Brown was a bit of a linchpin to the past for you.
Man.
Introduced you to stories and told you things about the players before him.
I think about him every day.
Man. I have to imagine.
And yeah. I've been so fortunate, Zach, because I've spent time with the old timers. In fact, I used to seek out the old timers. I still seek them out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, once those guys are gone, a whole library of information is gone. So even, you know, before I started to play music professionally, growing up in my community in South Georgia, always made a point of hanging out with my grandmama.
Mm-hmm.
I knew my great-grandfather. And just some of the old people in the community. You know, there's just so much information. And they were so relaxed.
Right.
They nothing was ever a crisis.
They had seen some things.
They seen the Depression.
Yeah.
They seen all kinds of stuff,
right.
man.
Right.
So I just like being around those people. There's so much information to be gotten from them.
There's a beautiful example of this on your Facebook profile, a video of you playing for Harold Carroll.
Howard Carroll.
Oh,
you
Howard
saw that?
Carroll. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know his history, right?
Just only through seeing that video and going backwards.
Well, you ever hear of a group called the Dixie Hummingbirds?
Yeah,
he was
one
of the founding members.
Right.
And the first guitar solo that I ever picked up was one of his, a solo that he played on a tune called Standing by the Bedside of My Neighbor. I was maybe 6, 7 years old when I learned that solo. And I always wanted to meet this guy, so I found out that he was living... I found out that he was alive, still alive, and I was surprised because I thought that he was gone. I was like, man, what are my chances of meeting this guy? And then I found out that he was still alive. And then I did a little bit of sleuthing, and I found out that he was in an assisted living facility in Philadelphia. And as soon as I found that out, I got in my car that very day, and I drove to see him.
Hmm.
And he had no idea who I was. But I came in there with my guitar and my amplifier, and I expressed how much I loved him and that I had grown up listening to his music. And I picked up my guitar and I played a tune called God Has Smiled on Me by James Cleveland. And that old man sat down, he was lying in his bed, and he started crying.
Mm. And when you watch the video, you may as well be his grandson in terms of the love. You know, you're playing music.
You saw the video.
Oh yeah, on your. Beautiful. This is what I'm saying is that there's a palpable love in the air through music. You know, you could tell that your melodies were causing him to sing.
Yeah,
he was lying in the bed singing along. It was beautiful.
But
it was
what you saw was the second visit.
Okay,
that was the second visit.
Gotcha.
But the first visit, I went to see him and I played that song for him, and we spent maybe like an hour or so together. And he said, Malone, you can come back and see me anytime.
Mm.
So, second time, which is what you saw,
right?
I went to go see him, and he said, yeah, Malone. He said, play that that James Cleveland tune for me again. He said, you played some beautiful things that day, but that's the one that really stayed with me. Yeah, so, you know, but I just had such a wonderful time getting to spend that time with him.
Right.
And, you know, it's something that no one will be able to take from me.
Right.
I'll take that to my grave, man.
Certainly.
That experience.
Circling back to Ray briefly before we talk about Wes, as a drummer, you and Ray and Monty Alexander recorded an album that is an absolute drummer's dream.
A lot of people like that record.
But you have to imagine, as a drummer trying to get their time together to play with you three with no drums, it's like you're in the band. And one of the things that I noticed about your playing is I was listening to that recording, and I played along to it so much, but just listening one day and stopped critically listening and was just sort of taking it all in, and you were comping behind Monty. And then you went to solo, and there was this air that came into the sound, because I realized just how powerful your comping was.
Well, time is...
You almost forgot there wasn't a drummer.
Time is of the essence, and it's everybody's responsibility. Right. You just can't lean on the drummer. Time is everybody's responsibility. But Ray Brown, one of the reasons why we got along so well is because I love to keep time.
Right.
Another reason why I get along so well with Ron Carter, because I play in a similar, same type of instrumentation with Ron Carter. With Mulgrew Miller was the piano player first, and then he passed away, and then Donald Vega took over the piano responsibilities. But time is everybody's responsibility, and I love to do it, man.
Right.
There's no greater thrill than to sit in the rhythm section and just make it sound good, man.
I almost
make
had
it
to
feel
scroll,
good.
Right. I almost had to scroll back and go, wait, was there a guest drummer on this tune? And I realized it was just you comping and then stopping to play your solo, because it
was
just so
commanding. Well,
that's
a compliment for me, man, because I'm very serious about playing time. Mm-hmm. And Ray Brown, he told some other people, he got back to me, he said, Russell Malone, not only is he a good time people, but he loves to do it.
Right.
Yeah, and that's why he hired me. But he would give me suggestions. I remember one night I was playing at a place called the Algonquin Hotel in New York with Diana Krall. Mm-hmm. And he came and sat right in front of the bandstand. I almost stained my undershorts looking out there seeing Ray Brown. But he was very complimentary. He pulled me to the side. He said, listen, yeah, you sound good. You play good rhythm. He said, but check out some of those Herb Ellis. Those records that Herb Ellis did with me and Oscar.
Oscar, yeah.
He said, just get some ideas. Because, you know, you can play four to the bar. That's great. But try playing some shout choruses behind the band, the way that a big band, you know,
right.
like the horn, those songs that play the shouts.
Yep.
He said, just try that. So he would always make little subtle suggestions, man. And then he told me another thing, too. Like when you're playing your solos, instead of just playing single lines the whole time, he said, you're playing a guitar. You're playing a guitar. You got six strings. You have more things at your arsenal than just a horn player. You can play chords. You can do all kinds of things. Try that. Mm. So he would tell me these little things, and I listen. And if I had not listened, I don't think he would have hired me.
Right.
You see, old people are funny, man. They will tell you something. And they won't say anything else. They'll just sit back and they'll watch to see if you're going to do it. And that's the way he was. That's the way Ron Carter is. He told me some things. If I had not listened, I don't think I would have worked with any of those guys.
Seems to me that that's something that you, whether you intended to do it or not, you've carried that reverence for your elders.
Well, this is the way I was raised.
Yeah, natural part of who you are.
I grew up in the South, man. Yeah. It's, you know, we were raised that way.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, the many ways of playing a solo is a great segue to Wes. We sort of part one of this experience here in Columbus was to screen the film Westbound that you were a part of and did some interviews for, and Wes's son Robert was a big part of. One of the beautiful things about that documentary is learning more about Wes the man, because his career and his life was, you know, so tragically short. But the musicianship and the sounds he created as a guitar player coming up, I have to imagine that was magnetic. That once you heard it, everybody maybe tried to sound a little bit like Wes as they come up as a guitar player. Was that something that you were doing as you were
trying to sound like Wes?
Yeah,
of course.
Finding yourself
sounding
like Wes, whether you meant it or not.
Well, I mean, I made a conscious effort to try to play like Wes. After a while, I realized I couldn't do it. But you know, I heard him and I liked him immediately.
Yeah.
And the way I came to Wes.
I was going to ask you to tell this.
The way I came to Wes, well, first of all, George Benson was the first jazz guitarist that I heard. Before that, it was B.B. King and Howard Carroll, you know, Roy Clark, Glenn Campbell.
Right.
You know, and Chet Atkins, can't leave them out.
Right.
But then I saw George Benson on television one night playing with Benny Goodman. And when I saw that, it let me know that there's a whole other level to aspire to. So I would try to play some of the things that I'd heard George do, you know. And there was a guy in my church heard me playing those licks. His name was Elder Butch Claude. And in fact, I talked about it in an interview with Robert Montgomery, mm-hmm. Wes's son. So he came up to me, he said, Russell, he said, you like jazz guitar. And I was like, I'm about to get chastised here. I said, well, yeah, I do like jazz guitar. He said, okay, come by my house. I wanna play you some things. So I went by his house one day after school. I'm like 12, 13 years old. He said, I want to play you some things. I went by his house. He put on two records. The first one was Boss Guitar.
Ugh.
And the other one was Smoking at the Half Note.
Right, Jimmy Cobb on both.
Man, let me tell you,
yeah.
I was ruined for life.
Right.
I'm like, Lord, have mercy. Because I'd seen Wes's name. I'd, you know, read the liner notes of those George Benson records, and I, you know, saw Wes's name, but I hadn't picked up on any Wes Montgomery recordings.
Right.
So he played this stuff for me, and I was just totally spellbound by what I heard, man. He said, you're really serious, aren't you? I said, well, yeah. So he gave me those two records, man. Gave me those two yep. records, and every day when I'd come home from school, before I even started doing my homework, I was sitting next to the I would put those records on the turntable, and I was sitting next to them and try to pick up whatever I could to the best of my ability. But the thing that was so appealing about Wes, I liked it immediately. You know, certain jazz players I had to listen to over a period of time in order to acquire taste for them.
Right.
But Wes, it's like, you know, we like ice cream. You like ice cream?
Right,
remember
sure.
the first time you ate ice cream?
Mm-hmm.
You liked it immediately. You didn't have to think about it.
Right, that's right.
That's the way it was with Wes Montgomery. I'm like, boy, this is some good ice cream.
That's a good analogy. Yeah,
man. So,
well, that's what we're here for tonight. As we mm-hmm. record this, you're about to go on stage in a couple hours to perform at the Lincoln Theater.
Mm-hmm.
As we spoke with Rob Dixon, the saxophonist in the band, he said that he was on the phone with you a few days ago talking through repertoire for
mm-hmm.
these
mm-hmm.
shows you're doing here in the Midwest. And the list got pretty long.
Mm-hmm.
Any hints as to what we can expect here in Columbus tonight?
Well, we're going to definitely play some of the songs that I don't want to give away too much too mm-hmm. soon, but we're going to do some of the jazz things that he did, some of his compositions, and we're going to also delve into the pop stuff, because some of that pop stuff, a lot of that pop stuff that he did was really beautiful stuff, man.
Absolutely.
And in fact, those are some of my favorite Wes recordings, those records like Down Here on the Ground and Day in the Life,
right.
Because, I mean, he had this gift for taking the most trite material and just creating magic. A tune like Wendy or Tequila and just, you know, just making it. He turned those songs into classics, man. They were good songs anyway, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
But the way he played those songs, man, he played jazz on those songs. And a lot of the purists were down on him, were saying, you know, how is he playing this stuff? You know, he's selling out, which is, you know, ridiculous in my estimation, because I don't think there's such a thing as selling out. I think the man was smart enough to cash in on his talent.
Mm.
You know, to me, there's no virtue in being a broke virtuoso.
Sure.
And he proved to us, Nat King Cole proved to us, George Benson and a few other ones, Errol Garner, they proved to us that, you know, you can play anything and keep the music accessible without dumbing anything down.
And the authenticity of his voice came through no matter
exactly.
what.
Exactly.
As it does for you, and I want to be, you know, respectful of your time on stage. So, Mr. Russell Malone, I want to thank you for being with us in Columbus. Not only to be playing Wes's music, but to have you in Columbus is a real boon for our scene. You know, there's a higher vibration here to have you and the band in town.
Bless your heart, man.
So thank you so much. We can't wait to hear the show tonight, and wish you all the best.
Thank you, Zach.
Wes at 100 will be available to stream at jag.tv on October 12th, 2023. You can watch Westbound on the PBS website. To watch extended clips, visit the YouTube page Further Westbound. The Jazz Scene is presented by Jazz Arts Group of Columbus, America's oldest nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing the art of jazz. This episode was hosted by Zach Compton and produced and engineered by Mercedes Aviles. Subscribe to The Jazz Scene wherever you get your podcasts.